Give me a word, people. Give me some words to work with.
Tuna can.
If I were
Caroline!
A tuna can.
Caroline, hold no! up. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Parks and Rewatch. I'm your host, Joe.
And I'm Joy.
And it has been too long.
At least 5 minutes.
It's been some minutes since we last did this. But we're back. We are here to wrap this thing up. We have two episodes left. This
oh my is gosh.
The first of the last.
And what y'all can't see unless you're a patron and you can watch the video recording is that we are here with a bunch of our closest friends who decided to jump on. There's 16 of us here in this lovely Zoom room. It's nice and toasty. Everybody's ready to be sassy. And I'm ready for it.
I'm absolutely ready for it. Susan's holding it down in the craft room. And I think I see some colored drawers there. I was going to say, even if it's not the craft room, it's symbolically the craft room.
That is where Susan supports us from.
We are good to go. So anyway, listeners of the podcast, thank you for your patience. So much has happened. I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit of it, but we also need to podcast about an episode of Parks and Recreation.
Which one is it, Joe?
It is the first of the final two. It is season 7, episode 11, Two Funerals.
Oh my gosh. How are we here?
I don't know, but we are. It's been a crazy journey. We started this podcast during a pandemic, all the things, and now 7 seasons later, here we are at the end. So Joy, what happens in today's episode?
Here is my poetic plot synopsis, and Joe, let's see if you get the form of how I did it.
Okay.
It's mainly visual, so I guess I can share my screen. Here we go. The endings have begun. Whilst Gary they still shun, o'er the states they will go, families they shall continue to grow. Under the cloud of sorrow, needing hope for tomorrow, everyone steps up and steps in. Rally the troops. Tom's proposal will win. Allied with Donna, Typhoon will bond. Let Gary be exalted and all be fond. And Salvatore shall never trim again.
All right. So I am 94% sure that I did not get it. What my brain went to and couldn't focus on anything else, even though I knew it was wrong, was the first letter of each line spells out a word, but it does not because that word is Twofner. No. It is! It is, though! I thought I got it wrong, but then I got it right. And this is this is a huge mess, but I somehow...
It's two funerals!
I somehow trick-shotted the right answer without realizing it.
I'm so proud of you.
Because I was trying to read it down, and I didn't read it down right. And then as I was doing it, talking about how I didn't do it right, I realized it is indeed a word, and it is two funerals. Well done. Two funerals.
Right. So there we go. Now it's time for some episode behind the scenes and trivia. IMDb said, the owner of the sign store is production designer Ian Phillips. So there you go. Fun little cameo. Bill Murray often told Amy Poehler that he wanted to make an appearance as Pawnee's long-mentioned but never seen Mayor Gunderson. When season 7 was wrapping up the series, Poehler had the idea to have Gunderson die and finally reveal Murray to be him as he laid in state in his coffin. Murray loved the idea and immediately arrived on the set to film the scene, which only took a few hours.
Brilliant.
There you go. ParksandRecreation.fandom.com had a Salvatore Manfrotti's bio. I was shocked at how much information there was there, considering we've only seen this character twice. Salvatore Manfrilotti has been cutting hair across the street from Pioneer Hall at the Modern Barbershop since 1958. All of the movers and shakers who have come through Pawnee have sat in Salvatore's chair at one point or another. He's the guy who made Larry Bird look the way he does. He created a hairstyle for Leslie Knope in the episode The Banquet that he calls The Mayor. I think she called it The Mayor, technically. he passed away in the episode Two Funerals for some unspecified reason, causing much distraught to Ron. According to Ben, he is one of the three most important people in a man's life, along with his lover and butcher. R.I.P. Reddit had a lot of things to say and a very nerdy string that I hope the musicians among us will enjoy. A user said, wow, this entire episode is about showing how each character has developed in the last 10 years. Tom chose substance over flash. Leslie was willing to go with the flow. Ben looked beyond his past. Ron opened himself up to new experiences and friendships. Gary went from people not knowing his name to becoming the mayor. April being nice and incredibly insightful about what Ben needs. And Donna looking past her old grudges. Look at that character development. A user called Christina said that John Ralphio being on pills explains so much. And honestly, same with Joan Calamezzo.
Pills, baby.
A user named Max Petrock said, okay, so all the cameos in this episode are awesome. Totally not ready for next week. Don't know how I'm going to handle it, except they spelled it H-A-N-D-E-L. Like, you know, the composer, Handel. Handel, whatever you want to say it. And I'm a dude, probably going to, meant to say shed a tear, but instead said ahead a tear.
Probably so going to ahead a tear.
I'm going to get ahead of a tear. But only because someone will be cutting an onion. Then a response came in. You don't have to be hiding your tears, like H-A-Y-D-N, the composer. Somebody responded, I'm also having trouble holding Bach, my emotions. Somebody responded, I couldn't come up with a Tchaikovsky pun, and I'm too proud to say Beethoven a dead horse. The last one in the string was, with puns like those, you guys must be getting all Debussy. Whoop! Debussy. Debussy. You know what? I'm just going to move on before I get myself in trouble. Oh, because
it's like composers.
Yeah. It's all musical composers. Classical music. Nerds! Made me so happy. A user called I Done a Plop Plop. Why would you name yourself I Done a Plop Plop?
These names.
I don't know.
These names.
But said, Ted, dumped in the lake, Ted, reappears. That's such a good reconnection.
Yep.
So there you go. Joe, the next section's yours.
It is. So I wanted to take a second and talk about penultimate episodes.
Penultimate is such a good word.
It really is. And if you didn't know, penultimate is defined as next to last. So it's second to last. It's the last thing before the last thing. And it's become common to refer to the second to last episode before the end of a show's season or before the end of a show's series run as the penultimate episode. And along with series finales and series premieres or season finales and season premieres, they've kind of taken on a life of their own. People discuss penultimate episodes as much or more as they discuss finales and premieres. So I wanted to take just a second and talk about some of my favorite penultimate TV episodes. This is by no means an exhaustive list. It's just some of the ones that came to mind as I was thinking about the concept of penultimate episodes. So the first one I'll mention is The Office Season 9, Episodes 22 and 23. ARM. Or AARM, that's an acronym. That is the episode before the series finale. They had some loose ends to tie up. I think they did it really well. The last few seasons of The Office kind of struggled as far as people's opinions and stuff like that. I still found stuff to enjoy in them. And even from people who didn't like the seasons that don't feature Steve Carell's Michael Scott, it's pretty universally agreed upon that they did a good job of bringing the show in for a landing, despite having some struggles, which is definitely not something that every show can say. And Arm, in particular, brought back some beats of what worked really well with the show. It resolved some character arcs in really meaningful ways, and it perfectly set up a very feel-good finale, so that's why it makes my list for the best penultimate episodes. The next one I have on the list is Parks and Recreation Season 7, Episode 11, Two Funerals.
It's Trois Funerals.
Trois Funerals. So this is, in my opinion, one of the best penultimate episodes, also for a series finale. I think it does a really good job of resolving some character arcs and of pointing us in the direction for the finale, and sort of, I think, clues us into the fact that it is going to be, as one reviewer described, saccharine sweet. But I've never really minded that when it comes to Parks and Rec. I think that Parks and Rec was always strongest when it leaned into the feel-good moments, when it leaned into the connections between the characters. And so I like and respect that they just totally leaned into it for the series finale. And so that's why Parks and Rec makes my list. The last one I want to mention is Outer Banks Season 1, Episode 9, The Bell Tower. If you may have heard me mention this before, I think Outer Banks Season 1 is about as close to a perfect season of TV as exists. It struggled a little bit. The last couple seasons were interesting. I'll be interested to see where they go with the next season. But Outer Banks Season 1 was awesome. It was entertaining. It was suspenseful. It kept me hooked. And I also know I'm looking back on it a little bit with pandemic rose-colored glasses, because I think most of you can identify with this. We all have a soft spot in our hearts for some kind of entertainment that came out during 2020, during the pandemic, because we were all looking for stuff to hang on to get us through. For some of you, that might even be our podcast, which is super cool. For us as a household, Outer Banks absolutely was one of those things. And Season 1, Episode 9, The Bell Tower, is perfect as far as suspense goes. So, spoiler alert, if by this point you haven't seen Outer Banks, which you should, but the main character, John B., is on the run. He's been framed. He's being chased by, it feels like, every single person on Kildare Island, and he's escaped and he's trying to make a getaway across Kildare Island at night, and it is a great episode of TV, so suspenseful, so much fun. So that's why Outer Banks rounds out my list of best penultimate episodes in TV. So that,
do you know,
being,
what my penultimate is?
Is it this one that's happening
the
right
ultimate
now?
Pen?
Ah, no. I swear it's bigger.
It is if I hold it closer to the camera.
Why would you do that?
Yeah, look at all that
Susan
detail.
Defending herself. No. No.
Anyway, I was waiting for that joke.
I tried to come up with a pen pun, and the pressure got to me, and I couldn't power through and produce one, and now I'm illiterate.
Did you break a nib? Okay, cool.
I'm just going to have to write that one off as a failure. I got it.
Write it off. Blot it out.
Ooh, okay.
All right, so that actually was super fascinating. I've known that I liked the word penultimate, but I haven't actually known what it meant. So I'm really glad you brought that forward. And part of me wishes I had the knowledge that you do to have watched those episodes as well. But
yeah,
alas.
I love looking at this stuff. I love TV. I love just sort of looking a little further into it at how TV is written, how it's structured, and how different series sort of approach the tropes and the familiar things like finales, like penultimate episodes.
Yep.
So that was a lot of fun.
Good job. Okay, now it's time for some dives. Dives. Up top, we're going to talk about an underground dance competition and some smalls. And in the boofs, we're going to talk about Tom's references. Joe, what are you most excited for?
Definitely underground dance competitions.
All right. Well, good thing that's the first thing we're going to talk about. So Leslie's going to start a new thing. Did I pay you to say that? You've gotten it right, like, multiple times. And not that it's a right or a wrong, but you just say the first thing and I'm like, look, perfect transition. Oh, you're giving me a heart. You're so cute.
That just means that we work well together and you come up with fascinating dives.
And we're a good team. We're a real good team. So Leslie's going to start a new thing, an underground dance competition. So my logical brain kicked in and I was like, okay, I understand the concept of dance competition, but what does it mean to be underground? Like, are we talking about it's below the radar, quote unquote, or does that mean it's like actually in a basement, or like we dig a hole and then we dance in it? I don't know.
Okay. So.
Oh boy. What's about to happen?
Well, now I just really want there to be a specific genre, like a niche party that it's sort of like a barn raising, but like the opposite.
Where, like,
some friends together, you get a group of friends together, you dig a hole for the sole purpose of dancing.
That's fine.
Like, I feel like that could be fun. I don't know what purpose it accomplishes, so unless
we're
you needed a
back
hole.
Then, but full circle to the pit.
Yeah. Yeah. We danced in it, the pit.
We all fell in it, the pit.
So before you proceed with this dive, I have to ask you a question.
Okay.
Have you been unfortunate enough as to have seen any of the Step Up movies?
No.
Okay. Because that's basically all they're about, and they're hilarious, and they sort of get they're like the Fast and Furious franchise of dance movies. So they start somewhat realistic and then they just get progressively more detached from reality. And I do think it's sort of funny that, because I haven't even seen all of them, I'm aware of them in culture. But I do think it's funny that you don't have that mental picture that a lot of young white people had in the mid to late 2000s of underground dance competitions being this big thing that actually maybe kind of happened.
I mean, is it like the dance off version of Pitch Perfect?
Yeah, that's a very good description, I think.
Okay, well, I get the picture then. We're good. Okay, so one of my favorite things, as we all know, is asking highly logical questions of things that don't deserve high logic. So I needed to know, what does it mean to be underground? So I did learn. It is underground can be used as an adjective, a noun, or an adverb, for all of you word nerds out there. So the adverb definition is what a lot of people think of. Beneath the surface of the earth, in or into hiding or secret operation. These are all Merriam-Webster definitions. In the noun version, it's a subterranean. I love the word subterranean. Feels like a whole story in itself and makes me want to see a terrarium, but that's very different than subterranean. A subterranean space or channel, an underground city railway system, an unofficial, unsanctioned, or illegal but informal movement or group. So I was like, okay, we're getting closer. Cool. Adjective, existing outside the establishment, produced or published outside the establishment. Why did it say that twice? That's weird. Especially by the avant-garde. So this is where it got fun. Synonyms for the adjective version, backstairs. Okay. You could have a backstairs dance competition, a covert dance competition. That really adds some weight to it. A hugger mugger. Hugger mugger is an official entry in the Merriam-Webster dictionary. What is a hugger mugger?
I don't know. It sounds like something that could get you canceled. I don't know why. Mike could get you canceled, Mike, y'all.
Definition is basically just secrecy, confusion, or muddle.
That
hugger mugger?
Such a bland definition for such a lively and risque term.
It feels like a bait and switch to me. Like, I'm going to hug it you, does. But then I'm going to mug does. You.
Yeah. That sounds just like the name of a criminal that the London police are looking for. The hugger mugger.
For a hugger mugger. He's about 5 foot four.
Like, you turn to a life of crime where you steal people's wallets, but you're not a jerk.
And so, you still get free hugs.
Yeah, so you steal their wallet, but you give them a hug. maybe they're a pickpocket that, well, pickpocketing and mugging are different things. So you're definitely mugging someone. You're just also hugging them afterward.
Greg said it's to mug someone gently.
Yeah.
Or Marie said you're mugging a person with a hug.
Like,
you're
here,
not stealing from them. You're forcing a hug on them.
Give me your lunch money.
Or Carolyn has a very, very practical definition. Someone that loves coffee, so you hug the mug.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, I'd need a real big mug to do that and not spill it all over myself. But then Greg said, here, sorry, I stole your money. How about a hug? hugger mugger was my favorite thing. The other words were behind the scenes, hush hush, clandestine. That one just feels like, ooh, clandestine. The other one that I didn't understand was hole and corner, like hyphens between hole and corner. Hmm. You could have a hole and corner dance competition. And hole and corner means being or carried on in a place away from public view. Insignificant.
Hole and corner, that sounds like a play that you're trying to make in a cornhole tournament.
Wow. Okay. Okay. Seems fine. Seems fine.
Like, oh, the tipsy tossers are down this round, but Dave is going to try to pull off a hole in corner to get them back in the running.
After he does a hugger mugger. And it's pretty hush hush. So basically, I understood now. It's one of those, like, of course, underground dance competition means something, and I kind of know what it means, but I just needed the definition. So basically, it's just secret. So I got that. Urban Dictionary said that underground is a genre in music and other forms of media intended for an elite audience that is often characterized by its high levels of originality and experimentation and does not conform to typical standards, trends, or hypes as set by the popular mainstream media. The sentence example was, the mainstream media has a tendency to steal new ideas from the underground. There's that. There's a website I found called Daily Rap Facts. I was like, this is going to be fun. All right, rap facts. Their grammar was kind of funny, so I'm going to read it as is. The slang term underground is an adjective which is used in rap hip-hop music to represent something that isn't mainstream or super popular by the masses. Underground means too unknown or not as popular. So, obviously, the next line was what's a dance competition, but I really just didn't feel like defining that because I think we all know that.
Intrinsically.
So. Mm-hmm. So now we move on to some smalls. Aaron just messaged me, the first rule of underground dance club, don't talk about underground dance club. Good job, Aaron. Smalls. So Andy in his sentence says, Gunderson was mayor my entire life. Really makes you consider the postulance of time. Which obviously it's a word out of context because Andy said it. And I was like, what does that even mean? I looked up postulants. I did it with quotations so Google would find that very thing. No. Google doesn't know. It's only in Parks and Rec.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was like, hold on. What's the closest thing? And the closest thing was postulant, which was originally one who makes a request or a demand or a candidate for something. The use of the term is now generally restricted to those asking for admission into a Christian monastery or a religious order for a period of time, preceding their admission into the novitiate. I'm proud of myself for knowing the word novitiate, and I attribute that to Sound of Music. Ta-da! Because the hills are alive with the Sound of Music. So postulance isn't a real word. What do you think Andy meant in that sentence?
That's a good question. I also looked up postulance and came to the same conclusion you did, that it's not a real word. Obviously, he's going for gravitas. He's going for seriousness. He wants to sound deep and thoughtful. The postulance of time, I'm guessing, is his fancy way of saying the passage of time.
Mm.
That's my best guess.
Okay, Casey said maybe it's like the fullness of time or the cyclical nature of time. I don't know, like the posturing of time. Yeah. I don't know. So anyway, there's my dive on postulance. My next Smalls is Donna freezing her head like Ted Williams. I looked this up and it's kind of gross, actually. ESPN had a whole article about it. A new book by a former employee of Alcor, the company that froze Ted Williams' remains, alleges the Baseball Hall of Famer's body was mistreated by the company. I should say this is probably like a graphic alert. If you're weirded off by dead bodies, then skip forward a couple seconds. Larry Johnson says in the book Frozen, My Journey into the World of Cryonics, Deception, and Death, that he watched an Alcor official swing a monkey wrench at Williams' frozen severed head to try to remove a tuna can stuck to it. The first swing accidentally struck the head, Johnson contends, and the second knocked the tuna can loose. So that naturally I'm like, what? What is a why is a tuna can there? What? Somebody addicted to tuna?
There's so much in this that doesn't make sense. Like,
correct. Correct. Yeah.
What? I didn't think a monkey wrench was real.
I don't
think
it is. Is
that a real tool?
I feel like it's a crescent wrench.
Yeah. And then a tuna can stuck to it.
So the article goes on. I found later in the article, which I only took parts of for time's sake, Johnson says Alcor used the cans from a cat that lived on the premises as pedestals for the heads.
I like that it's not pet cat. It's cat that lived on the premises, implying
the cat probably ran the joint.
That this cat has his own agency and is not someone's pet. Like maybe it's subletting the building. It's like, man, I wish these people would stop putting heads on my tuna cans.
Right? I mean, one thing at a time. I just had so many feelings. At that time, Alcor officials said there never was mistreatment of any of those frozen at the facility. It's just what is that sentence? Just that sentence by itself.
Yeah.
What? The company said that severing heads is a common practice in its preservation and that cracking has been noted as a problem in the procedure and is not the result of any mishandling. What?
Yeah.
So Williams' head and body were frozen separately. The process known as cryonics is conducted with the hope that someday scientists will be able to bring the subjects back to life. The heads and bodies, along with those of cats, dogs, and other pets, are stored in stainless steel containers at extremely cold temperatures. So that's a solid no from me.
I think the funny part of this is that when you talk about cryonics, when you talk about cryogenics, you think of very smart people that are doing this, like very smart, very particular people, you know, scientists and doctors. And the reality is a tuna can got stuck to his head and he's in with
because
a
they were using a tuna can to hold the heads up.
Yeah, very
scientific.
And then
it got frozen to the head.
And then just imagine that at some point in the future, they actually pull this off and he gets unfrozen and they're like, oh yeah, we can't wake this one back up. He has significant head trauma from what looks like a monkey wrench.
What even is a monkey wrench?
I don't know.
So let's just move on from that.
Sounds good.
We? Okay. So the Isle of Alais in Scotland, which is the farthest east Ron's beliefs will go. Wikipedia said, Alais is the fifth largest Scottish island and the eighth largest island of the British Isles, with a total area of almost 600 square kilometers, which is 240 square miles for those of us that are unfortunately imperial. Today, it has over 3,000 inhabitants, and the main commercial activities are agriculture, malt whiskey distillation, and tourism. The island has a long history of religious observance, and Scottish Gaelic is spoken by about a quarter of the population. Its landscapes have been celebrated through various art forms, and there's a growing interest in renewable energy in the form of wave power. Okay, that was really cool to me. Good for them. Use those waves. In general, the whiskies from this island, which, as I read that, just made me think of cats again, because, you know, whiskies like little whiskers, and whiskies like the cat food, which that cat might have eaten, and now we're back to tuna cans.
We were going away from that thing. And then you just threw a monkey wrench into it.
Oh, there it is. There it is. The whiskeys from this island are known for pungent, peaty, smoky, and oily flavors. All of that sounds horrible to me. Mm-hmm. I'm not a whiskey person. With just a hint of salty sea air and seaweed because of the use of the peat and the maritime climate, according to one report. So, anyway, whiskey and Ireland. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I'm with you. Not a whiskey person.
Great. Okay. The last Smalls was Ragaduck. Did you see that word anywhere in this episode?
I did not.
Ragaduck is what JR says when he and Leslie bring Tom the three items. And he just goes, Ragaduck, and unfurls the Sweetums flavored condoms. And Ragaduck was listed out on the captions. So I was like, hold on. Is this a real word? Ragaduck? And unfortunately, no. I am disappointed.
I was going to say, this is that Thor movie, right? Thor Ragaduck.
What would a ragaduck be? It feels like a ragamuffin, except it's not a muffin, it's a duck.
That I can see it being like a Thor movie. I can see it being a Pokemon. Like, go Ragaduck, I choose you.
What would Ragaduck's powers be?
Well, obviously he's gonna be a duck, because Pokemon is not subtle with its naming. So he's probably going to be like a duck that throws rags at people.
I was thinking maybe its feet would have slappy powers.
Oh, yeah. There you go. There you go.
You know, like all of those videos on the internet of people's pet ducks going through the hallways being like, the slappies could have power.
Ragaduck, foot slap.
Foot slap attack. Okay. Anyway, that was fun. And now it's time for our likes and dislikes, where we discuss what we liked about the episode and what we didn't like so much. Joe, what'd you like?
Well, I'm happy to report that I actually did my notes for this episode, most of them, a long time ago when we were going to record and then something happened. And so they were already done, and I forgot that they were already done. So I came back to do them for this recording, and I was like, oh, I already did this. But it had been so long since I watched the episode, I figured I'd better go back, watch it through again. See if I missed anything or any of my opinions changed. And they didn't really. The things that stuck out to me then were the things that stuck out to me now. So that worked out well for me. So
proud of you.
Kicking off my likes, I liked Andy missing the cue on the forced applause and saying, surprise!
That was great.
I liked the Bill Murray cameo as Mayor Gunderson.
It's perfect.
I like Andy considering the postulants of time.
You know, Mac is trying very hard to tell you his opinion, too, and he's angry because you're not listening.
Yes, he is. Mac, my apologies. I'll send you a bark box.
Aww.
I like Ron's meltdown over Salvatore.
It's so adorable.
I like Andy asking if Ron was killed by a younger, stronger barber.
It's so cute.
I think I meant to say Salvatore, asking Ron if Salvatore was killed by a younger, stronger barber.
Details.
Yeah, but I just loved that. I like Ethel's Walter Gunderson revelation.
I love that she owned it.
Mm-hmm. I like that the Bannersaur is called Scientologist.
It's so perfect for so many reasons.
I like that Bobby Newport is back. Paul Rudd.
Bobby Newport.
I like Ron's grief at Salvatore's funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And then I love that Ron thinks he looks like a raggedy-haired rock star.
Yep, that was really funny.
The man's in shambles. And then I like Leslie's commitment to her role in Tom's movie/proposal.
Of course, she took it to the nth degree.
Mm-hmm. I like that John Ralphio is back in possibly my favorite JR appearance ever.
Mm-hmm. Why was it your favorite?
It's just so good. I've talked about how John Ralphio sort of, to me, I think is best understood as this puckish figure who just sort of flits in and out of the narrative, doesn't need to serve any greater purpose than just coming in and creating these moments of mischief and chaos. And that is essentially his only job in this episode. And I absolutely love it.
Yeah, it's interesting because I observe him in this episode and I'm like, oh, brother, you have gone downhill. I'm so sorry.
And to me, what that is the writers, you know, at this point, they're saying just Ben Schwartz, do your thing, which he does. And I love it so much.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I realize how many of John Ralphio's iconic lines come from the last few episodes of the show.
Yeah.
So I love that. I love Joan's mayoral interview.
Because obviously she's only 27.
Yes. So good. I love that we get a money, please.
Oh, we get several of them.
And then I love that Eagleton Vaughn is back doing Eagleton Vaughn stuff.
I love how they reveal him.
Yes.
It's like just the three of them and then JK. Welcome, Ron Dunn.
I love that he talks about how he does not get his hair cut. His hair falls out when it feels it has completed its journey. And I just love how I've mentioned this before. We get Sam Elliott, who is famous for doing these very macho, tough guy roles, just saying all this ridiculous stuff to be a foil to Ron Swanson. It's so good.
I love it.
I like that Ben finally comes to terms with Icetown.
Mm-hmm.
And I like Tom realizing the proposal was all wrong. He's going to go do something. He's going to go with something more heartfelt.
Mm-hmm.
I like Leslie going, don't follow me. And then John Ralphio immediately going, I'm gonna.
At least he's upfront about it.
Yes. I love Ben's stroke of genius in promoting Gary.
Yes.
To mayor. I like Tom and Lucy's proposal.
Yeah.
And then I like Leslie and John Ralphio watching Tom's proposal.
Mm-hmm.
I love that we get the iconic line, pills, baby.
Classic John Ralphio.
In this episode. I like Typhoon cutting Ron's hair.
Mm-hmm.
I like that Ron would like Typhoon to please talk more about how you hate Europe and bicycles.
Good.
And then my last like is Gary's celebration, which was too over the top for Tom's proposal to Lucy, but was absolutely perfect for the newly appointed Mayor Gergich.
Yep. Yep.
So that is what I liked about this episode. What did you like about this episode?
I love Ben setting up the excitement for the crowd, because if it were me sitting there, I would have just been very confused about what Leslie was walking in talking about. So it was helpful for me as well as a viewer to be like, oh, we should be happy here. Okay. Got it. And then, you know, Andy being like, surprise. Like, that was funny. I love Perd's sudden appearance. That's comedically genius of good evening. I come to you tonight with some good news. Is not a sentence I'll be saying to you right now, because beloved Pawnee Mayor Walter Gunderson has died.
Perd.
Like, the way they insert Perd into these stories just makes me so happy. I adore Perd. Gunderson's honest video message just the simplicity of, you know, a lot has been done, but I wasn't doing much. I wasn't paying attention most of the time. Fortunately, the citizens of Pawnee didn't pay attention either. So if there's credit to take, I will humbly take it. And if there's blame, it's your fault. Thank you. Goodbye forever. I love Ben's reactions in this episode. I just picked three that made me really happy, where off the top, he was like, okay, that was something. And then choosing to ignore what you just said. And, oh, there's no money. I just, his reactions, like, they have Ben dialed mm-hmm. in. And I just love Ben being Ben.
Yes.
Andy, was he killed by a younger, stronger barber? Ethel's eulogy. I mean, how can you not love Ethel's eulogy?
Oh, yeah.
Seeing Ron be connected to something so deeply is actually extremely heartwarming. And that Donna and Andy jumped in with him. I mean, come on. Ron has seen Salvatore for the first Tuesday of the month for the past 4 decades. Same exact thing every time. Pays him $8, sits in the same chair, got the same cape. And then he'd always talk to me about the same thing. Nothing. Nothing. It was perfect. Like, just seeing that side of Ron, we don't get to see the sappy side very often.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to see it was like, chef's kiss. I've said this before probably, but I love the name of the sign shop, Scientologist. And I love that the small detail they threw in of Leslie's credit card company called her to make sure she's mentally stable mm-hmm. with how many times she is going to Scientologist. I love Bobby Newport's unfiltered innocence and awareness. It's so funny. And it's mm-hmm. such a good foil to Ben's search. Everybody's moving towards something hard in this episode. So seeing Bobby Newport and his just unawareness is actually kind of a relief to me.
He's going to space.
He's going to space. Do you have $600,000? That's what the Russian missile company needs. I love how Leslie recruited the jewelry store employees to help with the shoot. And I love that the main guy is Ted, which then I thought immediately, is this the Ted? Did he change industries and he's no longer in accounting and now he's in jewelry?
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think you're right. I would have to double check, but I do think that it is the same Ted.
Because, you know, we never see Ted when Barney's yelling at him. What if this is the Ted?
Maybe.
And that Ted also gets the gift of being thrown in the lake.
Yeah. I mean, he could just have two careers, you know. I don't know. But I do think it is the same actor who plays him.
All right. All right. I love that casually Tom just has a stunt double because, of course, he does. I love the sudden Eagleton Ron reveal and his magically shedding and shaping hair. I actually really heartfelt loved the moment where Ben realizes he doesn't actually want to be mayor and that acceptance of like, yeah, you know what? Icetown was part of my story and I don't want to erase that. I was like, all right, Ben, go get him, champion. You heal from that. I love Tom's sincerity and his actual proposal to Lucy and his owning and processing of what would actually work for her. For mm-hmm. once, he's being thoughtful without a catch. Like, what?
Mm-hmm.
What is going on here? Something's in the water. I love Ron and Typhoon with, you know, Ron's classic line, please talk to me more about how you hate Europe and bicycles. And it just touched me that Donna really cared for her friend, so he didn't become a rock star. Because there's no way Ron would do well as a rock star. Everybody would know his name. I love turning the after party into a celebration for Gary. The chair carrying, the choir, and then the transformation where they did the crossfade into the real song. Mm-hmm. I got legit goosebumps.
Yeah,
I was like,
was really
what
well
is
done.
This? Am I almost crying? Yes. Yes, I am almost crying. The fireworks, the banner drop, the hot air balloon, Gary getting interrupted before he can say anything, and then his last line of, I'm flying! And then holding on to the hot air balloon for dear life. Those are my likes. I have a couple mid-likes. I need to know, how is Tom's superhero video a multi-platform media experience?
I just don't
think he... I believe it was a one platform.
Yeah, I was going to say, I just don't think he expected to get sussed out by somebody who works in broadcast media.
Yeah. And here we are. That's not multi-platform. It would be maybe if you were streaming it to Vimeo and YouTube and all of these other places. That's multi-platform. Anyway, I do like that they show the process of filming it. That was really enjoyable for me. And Mona Lisa's money plea. It's hilariously terrifying. It's hard for me to separate the two. We know this about Joy. But also it's hilarious. And I'm scared for my life. That is all. What did you dislike, Joe?
Just a couple things that I'll mention. Number one is the idea of using a fire extinguisher just for a quick transition shot. Fire extinguishers are messy. They don't just spray fog. They don't just spray haze. They spray fire retardant. and then have these people not heard of post? Like, smoke effects are so easy to add in post. You didn't need to spray a fire extinguisher for a transition shot. And then the second is also in this scene, and that is Leslie talking to the cameraman during a take. That, as somebody who films, bugs me so much, with her telling him, rack focus, pan left. You do realize that audio is going to be in the recording, right, lady? Much harder to remove audio in post like that. Plus, I don't know, rack focus, pan left. He's just following the action. That poor guy. So those are my dislikes.
That made me happy.
That she was giving him direction.
Yeah, and she was using the right words.
Yeah, she was. It was correct terminology. What did you dislike about this episode?
I disliked that of all the last wishes, you would want to lie dead in a city council chamber.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, like everybody's frozen in the pips in front of me.
Oh, that's weird.
Are you still hearing me solid?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll keep going then. Of all the last wishes, you'd want to lie dead in a city council chamber. Like, come on, dream bigger. You could have anything you want for your last wish. That's it. Okay. I don't like that Tom was buying things for, quote unquote, for other people that weren't actually for other people at all. It's a classic Tom move, but I would have gotten really angry if that happened to me. But also, everyone's used to Tom, so they're just like, eh, whatever. Yeah. I didn't want those shoes anyway. Leslie pushing other people to do things to fix her feelings. Like, we know how I feel about that. We've experienced that throughout this whole series. And really, like, 200 doves, Leslie? How do you expect doves to spell out words? I did not dive into that because it seems preposterous to me.
It does a little bit.
So there's that. And now it's time for the coronation of the beautiful rule-breaking moth, the segment in which we choose one specific thing that was the breakout star of the episode, Joe.
It's probably going to shock nobody, but my beautiful rule-breaking moth is John Ralphio in this episode. I mean, it just has to be, this is the episode where we get the pills, baby line.
Yeah. Yep. How did I know? For me, it was how right it feels that everything is falling into place. Gary as mayor, Tom proposing, Ben and Leslie moving toward the careers they've wanted, Ron actually embracing the change of a new barber. Like, this is such a feel good episode. And I was really grateful for those warm feels.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And now
it's time
for the shaming of the Jerry, the part of the show where we shame one particular thing for bringing the episode down or being unnecessarily annoying, Joe.
So my Jerry is, and you mentioned this, I totally get why it's happening, and I'm mostly letting it slide because it's a great episode. It's the penultimate episode. But Leslie being Leslie just because something needs to begin, I guess, that felt unnecessary. And like, she just can't cope with her own feelings of dealing with change and things like that. So
yep.
Because This went right and it wound up sweet, but had it gone wrong, she could have really messed up Lucy and Tom's relationship, thrown things off there. So that occurred to me as well. But I do love that it leads to Tom's quote, "Why can't everyone share our commitment to outrageous pageantry?" Which was great. And the revelation that Leslie has spent over $100,000 at the Banner store, which feels very on brand.
Yep. Feels very appropriate. Mm-hmm.
So that's my Jerry. Who or what is your Jerry?
Where was Jeremy Jam? Of all the people that they should have interviewed for mayor, where was Jam? Did he just up and leave town? They were missing a fundamental part of Pawnee. Councilman Jam.
Yep.
You didn't even interview Milton. Milton would have been funny. Like, anybody. Where was Jam?
Are we sure Milton's alive at this point?
No. We are not sure that Milton is alive, but, you know, he might be eating a salad.
Extra anchovies.
So there's that.
Yeah, but I read that right before you said it, and I was like, oh my goodness, that is absolutely right. Where the heck is Jam?
I mean, that would have messed up the beautiful endings. But even to just see him, I don't know. It just felt like a miss.
Yeah, I agree with you there. All right, and now it is time for the awarding of the Lil Sebastians, the ceremony in which we rate each episode against the entire catalog of Parks and Recreation episodes by awarding it between 1 and 5 Lil Sebastians. 1 obviously being the lowest and 5 representing perfection, the most magical episodes of all time. And just a reminder that in the event both Joy and myself rate an episode as a 5, that episode will earn a place in the Parks and Rewatch Hall of Fame. In the event that both of us rate an episode as a 1, that episode will live in infamy in the Eagleton Hall of Shame. And if both of us rate an episode a 3, that episode is officially Jerry's Breakfast Burrito.
Wah, wah.
That being said, Joy, how many Lil Sebastians would you rate 2 funerals?
I don't feel like this is a hard one to rate at all. This is obviously a 5. This is not only a penultimate, meaning the one before the end, but penultimate, meaning ultimate and a pen. This is the ultimate of all the pens. I vote 5. What about you, Joe?
You're scaring Lisa. And Susan.
I'm sorry.
I meant to say Susan, and her face is right above the word Lisa, so I just got my wires crossed. It might have scared Lisa. I can't see her face.
I'm sorry, Lisa.
So that being said, I actually rated this episode a 2.
Wait.
I'm kidding. I rated this episode a 5.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. This episode is fantastic. It is absolutely. It is.
You punk. For a second, I was like, that's not what you wrote in the notes. What is going on?
I was waiting for you to go, why you like this. And then I was going to say, pills, baby.
Like that one time you tried to get me to get that one joke that I didn't get.
Wait. What was that? That was smells like Up Dog in here.
Yeah. And I kept being like, but what? Why Up Dog?
Oh, goodness. Yeah, it's a 5. It's fantastic. And that does mean that this episode, 2 Funerals, is officially inducted into the Parks and Rewatch Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Which means it's time for everybody to unmute themselves. Because we have some singing to do.
Together. Let us make a glorious cacophony of horrendous Where in the World is John Ralphio.
Joy, would you care to lead us forth?
Where in the world is John Ralphio? great.
That was beautiful. That was, oh my goodness. Joy, do you feel like a conductor right now? Do you feel like a conductor in a symphony?
Sure, sure.
That was beautiful.
I am now remuting everybody. Thank you so much for your contributions. Well done. Beautiful. It makes me ever so happy.
So as beautiful as that singing was, we actually don't need to ask where John Ralphio is because he's here in this episode.
We found him.
We found him.
He's right here. Obviously.
Pills, baby. So that means that it is time for us to do Johnny Karate's Karate Moves to Success, an inspirational segment in which we apply the karate moves to success in our own lives. Joy, what would you like to karate chop this week?
Plastic water bottles that break. About a year ago this time, I had a beautiful clear purple, like dark clear purple is like my favorite of all the clear colors. Like when I used to do bead crafts, like dark purple clear was my favorite. And so I had a dark purple clear water bottle and I loved it. And all I have left of it is the top of it right here because I finally gave up and threw it away. But it was covered with all of the stickers that I loved. And about this time last year, I accidentally dropped it right before we went on a big trip to California. And then I didn't have my water bottle with me. And so Brie had to take me to REI when we got to California. And she got me a teal water bottle, which I then covered in a lot of stickers. And then you know what happened this week? On Saturday, I dropped it and it broke. And I had just put a new sticker on it that I was very excited about, which was a hot dog from my friend Ashley because I had a hot dog birthday party. And then now I have to get a new hot dog sticker.
But
Brie got me a new water bottle.
Yay!
And it's metal. Do you hear that? So hopefully when I drop it, it's not an if, it's when I drop it, it'll be fine. And I don't like the feeling of metal on my teeth, so I got plastic at the top.
That's smart. Yeah, that's smart.
So anyway, my favorite stickers are, oh my gosh, Houston, I have so many problems. Thanks for asking. obviously, Burt Macklin, FBI. And this one, which is Taco Mary, which is brought to you by an amazing restaurant in Vegas called Tacos and Beer.
Wow.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So I am karate chopping plastic water bottles.
I feel that pain when you lose something that you have invested stickers into.
Yeah. This is my security blanket.
Yeah.
If I am without my water bottle, like if Brie and I go somewhere and I forget it, she's like, are you okay? And I'm like, no, I'm obviously dying.
See, I don't know if you're anything like me, but I have a cup on a shelf up there off camera just for stickers.
Wow.
I almost never put a new sticker on anything right away. Like if I get a sticker, it goes in the cup. It doesn't go on anything right away, 99% of the time, because stickers are really important to me. Like I love stickers and I'm
same.
And so if I put stickers on something, I typically do it almost all at once. I don't add like one sticker, then a month later, another sticker. I plan out what stickers are going to cover the entire surface of whatever I'm going to be stickering so that I can plan for size and color and all that stuff. And so to put stickers on something and then have it break is just a devastating feeling because you can't get those stickers back.
I know. I know. Thank you all for your empathy and, you know, all of the comments that we have going through right now about stickers and dented water bottles. And Deborah also has a security blanket water bottle. And, you know, I get it. I get it, y'all. Thanks for being here with me in my most vulnerable moments of loss.
I also like how Aaron said my daughter has a sticker of Harry Styles on her water bottle. And I always tell her it's John Ralphio. And I think that that would be funny if you flipped it on its head and you, at some point, if she hasn't seen it yet, you introduce her to Parks and Recreation and tell her that's Harry Styles. John Ralphio is Harry Styles.
That would be fun.
Oh, my goodness.
I dare you, Aaron. All right, Joe, what are you karate chopping?
I would like to karate chop the postulants of time.
This feels like a very deep conversation that I don't know if I'm ready to have.
I don't know that it's that deep. It's just the realization that I blinked and we're almost done.
Ah, the postulance of time.
Exactly. It feels like a statement of that gravitas is needed.
Gravitas.
I mean, it feels like a couple months ago that we had different setups. We had different mics. We were just figuring this thing out.
I was in a basement once.
You were in a basement once. And that was before you went into like the witness protection program.
I know.
We started labeling everything nondescript.
Right.
I went through probably 73 different iterations of my studio during the time this podcast.
This is very true. This is very true.
Went on. It's insane. Like it really goes so quickly. So
yeah,
that's my karate chop this week. Who do you want to be nice to?
Okay. I went on a like 2-week gig, made some new friends, and they told me about a book series. So for all of you that love to read and love to read nonfiction, I got some new series for you. It's The Chronicles of St. Mary's, and it's a fun play with history. So it's got some time travel in it. It's got revisiting historical events. It's got a lot of chaos in it. It's just so fun. So I would highly recommend the Chronicles of St. Mary series. There's quite a few in there, which also makes me very, very happy. It is a wonderful fiction series. I think there's at least 14 books in the series.
Very cool. I've never even heard of those.
Anyway, what about you?
Have you watched the show on Netflix, The American Barbecue Showdown?
No, because Bree and I have been binging Survivor still. We're working our way from... We're now in season 31 or 32.
Wow. That's impressive. That is impressive.
Yeah. Anyway, so we're not going to watch anything else really until we finish Survivor.
That's fair. I also like to mainline shows. I don't sprinkle my viewing around. I watch one thing until I'm done with it. So
yep.
I understand that. But the American Barbecue Showdown is fantastic. It's a cooking competition show based around American barbecue. And the first season is so good. It's going to make you want barbecue real bad. It's heartwarming. It's super well done. And season 2 just came out. So there are now 2 seasons of it out there.
Is the person you work for that you do the videos for, are they going to be on it?
I'm pretty sure that would be a dream come true for him and also be terrifying. So not as of this point, will he be on it, but he should be.
I'm still rooting for you.
Yes. And to answer the Nathan and Marie's question, about jury duty. Yes, I have. And we're going to actually talk about that a little bit later, because how the show Jury Duty intersected with my real life is just downright freaky. So we're going to talk about that in the hugging booths.
Stay tuned for the booths.
So now's that time that I say, Joy, take us to that outro.
And this is the time where I say, give me a word, Joe. And you say, oh my gosh, why didn't I think about this?
I forgot.
All right, guys, that's we need some think help about here.
Let's have chat give us a word. I like that idea, mainly because it takes the pressure off of me. Pills!
We got 2 in a row from Casey and Lisa.
Oh, that was perfect!
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Okay, gotta get the tone in my head. Does anyone know the song, If I Were a Fish?
I think so.
All right, well, here's gonna be your new version of If I Were a Fish. I had the octave changed in my head, and now I forgot about it. Because it's... were a fish. Nope, that's still the harmony. I hate it when this happens. I feel so nervous. I'm like, oh no! All of the notes and things. There we go. If I were John Ralphio, you would look at me and say, hey, that's definitely John Ralphio. And he is covered in raccoon hair. And he's twitchy. I wonder if he's okay. If I were John Ralphio, I would... What would I do if I were John Ralphio? Oh my gosh, I've never put myself in John Ralphio's shoes. This is a real exercise in empathy. If I were John Ralphio, I would cause some chaos and you'd say, oh my gosh, what the heck are you doing? I didn't ask for that. And yet I've got some. Why is it John Ralphio always so crazy? Why is he always going off the wall? Why can he not finish a rap on the right note? It's because he is so full of the pills, baby. I need another. Give me a word, people. Give me some words to work with.
Tuna can,
if I were
Caroline!
A tuna can.
Caroline,
I would hold
now!
Up. If I were a tuna can, you would hold me up and say, look at that tuna can, it's holding up that frozen head. It's doing so great, I can't believe I never had this before. If I were a postulant, I would... I don't know what I would do if I were postulants, because it's not a real word, but yet it's what I have here, and that's what we're doing. Why are all the novitiates so mean? Guys, keep giving me words. Here we go. Thank you. Why do they feel like they're just Euro trash? You know what they should do? They should go underground. Where's Jeremy Jam when you need him? Don't worry, Typhoon is here to sing along. How lucky are we? Of all the bicycles in Berlin, hey, we got Russian rockets. Keep giving me words, people. I'm now a barber who hates Europe. So you get to be the mayor. And I will print a banner. That was really fun. Y'all should just give me words all the time and I'll just make up a song and include all of them.
That was amazing.
So the words that got added were, tuna can, postulants, novitiate. Oh, Bree said, if I were a fish, I'd be in a tuna can. That's funny. Eurotrash, underground, where's Jam, Typhoon, Rockstar, Russian Rocket, Bicycles, Team Rocket, Barber, Mayor, Banner, All My Life, Cryogenics, Banner, and Ballin.
I have to call.
If I were a fish, I would be in a tuna can, squished up in there with no air to breathe, but it's fine because I'm dead. If I were the mayor, I would sit there with my hammer thing and hammer all day, make things official because I can. Why is everybody on the pills? Why is everybody not dead, just cryogenically frozen? If I was scrolling through and I saw Zoo Dolores, I'd say, that's a monkey wrench and it's not a hammer. So sing along. All right, Joe. All right.
Well, I have to call Carolyn out for committing possibly the biggest party foul ever to happen in a live recording.
No, that was my favorite. That was my favorite. Good job, Carolyn.
Oh my goodness, that sucker punched me right in wherever laughs come from, and I could not recover. I deceased on the spot. Like a monkey wrench.
On the spot.
Like a monkey wrench to the old tuna can. That just took me out.
Wow.
well done, Carolyn. Oh my goodness. Shoot again. Okay, I got this. Thank you, everyone, for hanging out with us, especially those of you crazy patrons that are hanging out with us currently on the live stream. This has been a blast. What a penultimate episode. Deborah said this has been better than a party at the Snake Hole. I would have to agree. Maybe not by much, but man, it's been good. If you would like more Parks and Rewatch in your life, you can follow us on Instagram at Rewatch Parks, Facebook, the official Parks and Rewatch fan club on Facebook. It gets almost as wild over there sometimes as it does on these patron live streams. Greg wants another snort juice. Somebody get on it. If you would like to support the show and get access to our bonus content, including video versions of our podcasts and our after show exclusive for patrons, the Hucking Booths, head over to patreon.com/parksandrewatch. And like we've mentioned before, since this is the second to last episode of our show, guys, if I were you, I wouldn't even worry about, you know, the tiers, because we have our brand new tier that is $1 a month. That is
worry about the tears coming out of my eyeballs, because we have new payment tiers in Patreon.
Yeah.
That was a cute joke.
It was. My emotions are fine. So we do have a new tier, though. It is called Interim Mayor of Pawnee. It's $1 a month. That is as low as Patreon would let me make it. So if you subscribe at that tier, you get access to all of our bonus content, all the Hucking Booths, everything that we've ever created, backwards, forwards, because basically what that is going to do is help us just keep our show on the air after it's done, after we move it to the archive, so we can keep it up on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever else you listen, and you can still have access to all our bonus content that's on Patreon. So your mayorship is waiting. We didn't get you a hot air balloon, but we got you some bonus content on Patreon. And if you're an email type of person, you can send us an email at rewatchparks@gmail.com. It would mean the world to us if you would leave us a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you can review podcasts. And I think that's all the stuff that I need to say here, other than thanks for hanging out with us. And we hope you will join us next time for the finale of Parks and Rewatch.
Okay, this is the time where we ask all of you to unmute, please, and we all say the word together.
With that,
ready?
What do we say?
Snort juice!
Bye! Tuna can!
Cryogenics!
I should have known someone was going to say that, and I still didn't see it coming.
There's that. Ha!
Well done.